Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and on the line with me today is Dr. Paul Pearsall, who is a clinical psychologist who lives and works in Hawaii. He is the author of over 200 professional articles and 15 international best-selling books, including The Heart's Code, Toxic Success, and most recently, The Beethoven Factor, the new positive psychology of hardiness, happiness, healing, and hope. And Dr. Pearsall, I'd like to welcome you to the call.
Aloha from Hawaii.
Well, could you share with us what is the Beethoven Factor, and how does this this information, how can this help someone who is working with teams and teaching teams?
Anybody who takes the sacred privilege of trying to help others learn, to serve in the role of teacher, probably knows very well that one of the challenges we have is how do people really deal with the stresses of what they're trying to accomplish. And the old psychology used to be looking at stress as something that you had to, as a team and as a leader, somehow cope with or overcome or manage. Now we know from the new field we'll talk about today, the new field called positive psychology, that stress is essential. And the best team leaders, the best teachers, are those who do not get rid of stress or reduce it or try to avoid it, but really capitalize on it in something we call SIG, which is S-I-G, meaning stress-induced growth. So where did the Beethoven factor come from? We all probably know that Beethoven wrote his Ode to Joy, his Ninth Symphony, when he was deaf.
Yes.
And when it debuted, he could not even hear the crowd cheering for him and didn't even know the audience was applauding or the symphony was even over, and tears just came from his eyes. And he went on to write some of the most brilliant new music, the new unique approaches and creativity of his string quartets, etc. And I also picked Beethoven because he was a nut. Now, what I mean by that is he was not a particularly happy guy. He was not one of these sort of new age, everything's fine persons. He had all kinds of flaws, as we all do. So I thought, I'm going to call this the Beethoven factor, this stress-induced growth, this crisis-induced awakening, because, and I hope every team leader will remember this, I am now convinced that our greatest human strengths, those strengths that we want to bring out of people, are forged in the crucible of adversity. I know now that life begins on the other side of despair. Life really only has meaning in the struggle. If we realize that, then team leaders, instead of seeing stress as an obstacle, they begin to see it as a path. And that's what the research on Beethoven factor was about. It was about a new psychology, not the old one that looked for problems and let's all identify the problems and let's write down the problems and let's approach it and solve it, but looking at it the other way. What's right? What's good about you? Instead of what's worse and weakest, what's best and bravest? That's a whole different approach, and it begins with a question that I suggest humbly that any team leader, any real teacher of people who wants to be in that position, might ask every one of those they work with. And here it comes. Think of the person who knows you the best. Now, that be your mom, your dad, your wife, your husband, sister, brother.
Yes.
Who knows you the best? Now, how would they answer this question about you? Are you a true joy to live with every day?
Oh, gosh.
That's what a lot of people say. Oh, gosh. Because the old question, if you listen carefully, even in leadership studies, was, is my life a joy? Am I doing right? It was that self-focus, personal power, self-potential. This approach says, look, what about us potential? What about the idea of living our lives so that we're a joy to live with? That our objective working as a team is not that we will just necessarily succeed, but that our behaviors together enhances this world and becomes stronger. That's what the concept of happiness, hardiness, healing, and hope, the subtitle of the book, addresses those components, and they're crucial.
Can you give an example of how we can apply this? Someone listening to this recording, what's an action step that they can take?
Well, don't forget the first action step I would suggest, what I would be asking anybody on my team, that question.
Yes.
That's a very, and that'll lead, if the people are honest, to hours of discussion. And then the next question I ask, and boy, this leads to discussion, and it's a good action step to ask this question, and that is, what do you need? We're going to work together here, but what are your needs? What really matters to you? And I've found in our research that we only need three things.
What are they?
We need something to live for, something worth dying for, and now relevant particularly to teams and working together, people with whom to share the first two things.
Mm.
And you can't do the third until you know the first two. And if you really take that seriously, that leads to a long, 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 meaningful discussion. Because what is it really worth living for? What is it worth dying for? And with whom am I sharing those two things?
And you would suggest doing this regardless of the team, whether it's a classroom in a high school or a corporate office?
Well, we've done it, and we're continuing to do it with teams such as the military, Navy SEALs, the War College, the university, medical students. It's the first thing I tell my medical students. We've got to take a different approach. Positive psychology is not happyology. It means that we're going to really start looking at what our strengths are. For example, I asked, you talk about teamwork, I have a whole group of medical students, and we're trying to work as a team, and I'm trying to lead them into a team approach to healthcare. So I asked them to begin with the question, would you define for me a well person? Now, they could spend hours telling me about sickness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They could not come up with a well person, and here's an answer you'll just love. The answer from one of the residents was this one, someone on whom we've not done enough tests. There's your answer.
Oh, my.
There's your answer. So I'm talking about, I know this is radical for team building and teaching in a classroom and running a corporate meeting, but just think, at most of the corporate groups that we work with here, have taken, unknowing to them sometimes, a what's called a pathogenic or a negativistic view. They're thinking about what could go wrong, what did go wrong, and fixing it. They are not identifying, even though they say they are, they give lip service to it, the real strengths and capacities and power that rests within us. And we just don't look at that because we become a problem-solving society.
Yes. Now, going back to the idea of stress, normally, I think people are used to hearing stress is bad, and we want to reduce stress in our lives, and yet you're saying stress-induced growth.
I'm saying that stress is not bad. Certainly, too much of anything is bad. Certainly, I think it was Carl Jung who once said, God save me from a life in perfect balance. And what I hear all the time in lectures is we got to have balance.
Mm.
Nobody lives in balance. That's not what life is for.
Yes.
Life is naturally chaotic. And so is stress. Stress is essential to life. That's when I wrote about thriving. You have to understand when you're leading teams, now almost all of our teamwork focuses on trying to produce something successful.
Yes.
It may be a course or a learning or a product or whatever. So if you think of a graph and you think, okay, we're functioning now as a team, and then adversity hits. Now, adversity might be a financial setback, a corporate setback, problems in the classroom, some governmental change, but there's an adversity.
Yes.
And all teams have to deal with that adversity, and we find in our research on the Beethoven factor that they deal with it in five ways. First way is what we call kindling. You know about kindling wood?
Yes, kindling wood, yes.
They make it worse. Somehow, by what they're doing, their negativity, they start to make it worse. This is true with patients. It's true with students. You have to watch your mouth. We say in Hawaii, ika'olelo no keola. Words give life. Ika'olelo no kamake. Words give death. Watch your mouth, or you'll be a kindler. Now, the other response we call victimizing. Victimizing means I'm just going to sit here, poor me. I don't know if you remember Winnie the Pooh and Eeyore.
Yes.
Poor, everything done. And that kind of reaction. And you see that in some teams. That can really start to permeate the mana or the energy in Hawaiian of the group. And you can almost see who's doing the kindling and who's doing the Eeyoring. Then they're surviving. Now, if a team aims at that level, they're just going to be at the survival level. I had terminal cancer 15 years ago. I had a bone marrow transplant. I died three times and came back. I don't want to be called a cancer survivor. That wastes too much of my energy.
Mm.
I want to go higher than just survival. And that brings up the next reaction, which is resilience, recovery. And heaven knows, that's all I ever hear about now, people living in recovery or denial, like life exists in two stages. But beyond recovery, and I believe the objective for every team, every teacher, every class, ought to be thriving.
Hmm.
That is, learning the skill of converting stress and adversity to growth and creativity. That, to me, is an ultimate team goal, to identify that adversity. Now, let's look for our strengths. And how do we make that, not overcome it, not cope with it, not manage it, but convert it and create it and make it a catalyst instead of a catastrophe?
Can you give an example of that, of where someone did that?
Well, there were, I interviewed hundreds of people for the Beethoven Factor. And probably there's so many I could choose from. But let me use a drastic one. It may be a reach, but it's because it impressed me so. A woman was placed in a concentration camp, piano teacher. Lovely woman. She's described in the Beethoven Factor. And she was treated, as you can imagine, just in the most horrendous, inhuman ways. But the guards, the Nazi guards and Gestapo, wanted her to play for them. And she thought that was the one thing she wasn't going to give up, and she would not play. So they took her hands, put it on a rock, and took their rifle butts and broke all 10 fingers.
Oh,
shattered
my gosh.
Them, shattered them. Ruined her life, you would think. This woman that I met with that tattoo still on her arm, I'll never forget her coming to my office, and as a young, stupid, arrogant doctor, I looked down and there's this tattoo, and I said, you know, there's ways we could take that off. And she looked me in the eye and said, never, never. That reminds me of how I was stronger than they were.
Wow.
How I took that adversity and survived. You want to talk about teams? I read about and in my research and interviewed in those, can you imagine any worse human situation than a concentration camp?
No.
And even then, teams forming. Teams forming, people would ask me, what do you mean? How could a team form there? These people were separated. And I said, uh-uh. They were connected heart to heart. And we do know that the heart literally thinks. It has 5,000 millivolts of energy, where the brain has about 130. It connects with other hearts. You can measure heartbeats feet away from the heart. When you give a new heart to a heart recipient, many of the transplant recipients receive the memories of their donor. These are profoundly important things. So in studying the Beethoven Factor, we found that people who were the thrivers, people like that story I just gave you,
yes,
those were the ones who dealt with it by the heart. Not just a cliche, but really lived by the wisdom of the heart. Now, on simplistic levels, when we do our teamwork and team building, we try to have them look at it from that perspective. Let's, first of all, before we talk about the problem or our goal, the first thing we're going to do here, number one, we want to identify all of our strengths. What's right about us? What are we good at? What are our individual and group strengths? How are we going to connect? Let's not just get right to the problem or right to the task or start trying to write a mission statement or whatever.
Mm.
First thing is first. What are our greatest strengths? And that should take a long time.
And this helps people get into the mindset of thriving.
It does, because then their point is, no matter what comes up, and I don't know, I'm not a team expert, but every time I've been working with teams, there'll be some kind of obstacle come up, something
yes.
comes up. That we did all this work, and now we came up with our plan, and look at the boss vetoed it, or we can't get funding, or we can't do the project we wanted because the principal in the school won't let me do it, or a principal wants to do something and the school board won't let him do it. But if you've spent a lot of time already looking at what your thrivability is, and you say, look, we got all these strengths, let's look them up again. We're ready to take on the world then, because we know ahead of time what our strengths are, and we have them identified. And that's why I picked those four terms. Hardiness, for example, groups have to understand that hardiness is a sense of challenge, commitment, and control. So when you're building your team, you say, do we have that? Are we making this a challenge or is it a hassle? Are we committed to this? If not, forget it. And control, you'll be surprised. The best teams we worked with knew when to give up. It was enlightened control. I know that in the West it's supposed to be quitters never win, winners never quit.
Right.
But good quitters are very successful. They're able to say, they ain't going to work. Forget it.
So the whole idea of tenaciousness, there is a time when we should back off.
Absolutely. In team building and our research for the Beethoven Factor, there were three types of strengths. One was just perseverance. And it's valuable. Please don't hear a negativity in that. I mean, we're going to stick this out. I would have died from cancer if I didn't try to fight it.
Yes.
So there's a role for that. Then second strength is growth. Very important. But not only am I going to fight it, I'm going to grow because of it. We talk about thriving. The third strength is giving up. And I wonder how many people really think of that as a strength. I'm a proud quitter. I'm happy to say I'm less than I can be sometimes.
Yes.
And I know that's contrary to what you may hear from many other authors and researchers who say you've got to be number one, never give up, go for the gold, grab the gold, set your team goals high. That's okay, too. I'm trying to get people not to think either or, but and.
Yes.
And includes, maybe we should just give this up. And the whole team should look around it and say, you're a quitter.
Yes.
Maybe we better listen to what this person's saying. Maybe that's a good option.
So happiness. You mentioned the hardiness. How about happiness?
Happiness is not what people might think. We know that most of us have a happistat. That is, we're almost preset for happiness. No matter what happens, some people are really happy. No matter how good life is, no matter how bad, they seem to be happy. They have a general temperament. If you don't believe me, ask any mom or dad who's had more than one kid. And they'll say, same parents, kids are totally different.
Yes.
Okay, it's just a fact of life. So let's, first of all, we have to realize that. You can't just be this happy-go-lucky, no matter what the pop psychology says. But we found what happiness is, and good teams do it. That's one of the great benefits of working in a team, is that capacity of what a researcher called, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi called flow. Getting into the flow. Flow means you lose all sense of self, time, and place. I don't know if you have a hobby, but sometimes if you're really into it, like we are, hopefully are in this interview, we'll forget to go to the bathroom, to eat, or what time it is. We'll just get lost.
Yes.
And isn't it strange that our greatest fear, loss of ourselves, is actually our greatest pleasure? And that's what a team should be doing. They'll be happiest when they don't. Nobody there is an individual anymore. We're just so into what we're doing, we're lost in it. That's what real, true happiness is. And again, though, you got to watch your mouth. There's good studies showing that the words you say do reflect, so that if you start talking negatively, you're going to start feeling that way. So it's very important on the happiness component to look at that. That's hardiness, happiness. The healing point, and teams that are working toward a healing goal have to understand that they're looking for some sense of manageability, comprehensibility, and meaningfulness. Those are three key concepts of healing. But hope, perhaps, is one of the most important. Any team leader who doesn't engender hope is going to be running in place through the whole process.
Hmm.
Hope takes three things. Nobody in this team takes this personally. It's us, not me.
Yes.
This is not a self-help group. This is an us regard group. They don't see things as pervasive. That is, we screwed up on this, so everything about this team's wrong. You don't make it pervasive.
Yes.
And thirdly, very importantly, nothing is permanent. Maybe we didn't do good today, but no emotional state lasts. None. It will always change. So if you avoid those three P's, taking it personally, making it pervasive, making it permanent, you're going to have much more hope. If you have those three C's, challenge, commitment, control, and knowing when to give control up, you're going to have hardiness. When you're into the flow, you're going to have happiness. When you have that healing component of, this means something to me, I can comprehend what happened, and I can manage it through faith, through prayer, through strength, through work. Boy, you have a team with those capacities, and you've got a stellar group of people who are really following the Beethoven Factor.
Wow. Dr. Pearsall, thank you so much. This is, the book again is The Beethoven Factor, The New Positive Psychology of Hardiness, Happiness, Healing, and Hope. It's available at Amazon.com, I know. And if people would like to find out more about you and your work, they can go to paulpearsall.com?
Correct, paulpearsall.com, P-E-A-R-S-A-L-L.
Yes, and that link will be right next to the interview here. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. And thank you for our listeners. And make sure that you go out and get the Beethoven Factor and learn how to apply these lessons with your team. This is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com signing off. Thank you.